The next part of this program will explore how two different Indian societies, the Wampanoag and the Inca, reacted to the incursions from across the sea. It may seem odd that a program about Indian life before contact should devote space to the period after contact, but there are reasons for it. First, colonial descriptions of Native Americans are among the few glimpses we have of Indians whose lives were not shaped by the presence of Europe. The accounts of the initial encounters between Indians and Europeans are windows into the past, even if the glass is smeared and distorted by the chronicler's prejudices and misapprehensions. Second, although the stories of early contact, the Wampanoag with the British, the Inca with the Spanish, are as dissimilar as their protagonists, many archaeologists, anthropologists, and historians have recently come to believe that they have deep commonalities. And the tales of other Indians' encounters with the strangers were alike in the same way. From these shared features, researchers have constructed what might be thought of as a master narrative of the meeting of Europe and America. Although it remains surprisingly little known outside specialist circles, this master narrative illuminates the origins of every nation in the Americas today. More than that, the effort to understand events after Columbus shed unexpected light on critical aspects of life before Columbus. Indeed, the master narrative led to such surprising conclusions about Native American societies before the arrival of Europeans that it stirred up an intellectual firestorm. Consider Tisquantum, the friendly Indian, of the textbook. More than likely, Tisquantum was not the name he was given at birth. In that part of the Northeast, Tisquantum referred to rage, especially the rage of Manitou, the world-suffusing spiritual power at the heart of coastal Indians' religious beliefs. When Tisquantum approached the pilgrims and identified himself by that sobriquet, it was as if he had stuck out his hand and said, "Hello, I'm the Wrath of God." No one would lightly adopt such a name in contemporary Western society. Neither would anyone in 17th century indigenous society. Tisquantum was trying to project something. Tisquantum was not an Indian. True, he belonged to that category of people whose ancestors had inhabited the Western Hemisphere for thousands of years. And it is true that I refer to him as an Indian because the label is useful shorthand. So would his descendants, and for much the same reason. But Indian was not a category that Tisquantum himself would have recognized, any more than the inhabitants of the same area today would call themselves Western Hemispherians. Still less would Tisquantum have claimed to belong to Norumbega, the label by which most Europeans then referred to New England. New England was coined only in 1616. As Tisquantum's later history made clear, he regarded himself first and foremost as a citizen of Patuxet, a shoreline settlement halfway between what is now Boston and the beginning of Cape Cod. Patuxet was one of the dozen or so settlements in what is now eastern Massachusetts and Rhode Island that comprised the Wampanoag Confederation. In turn, the Wampanoag were part of a tripartite alliance with two other confederations, the Nauset, which comprised some 30 groups on Cape Cod, and the Massachusett, several dozen villages clustered around Massachusetts Bay. All of these people spoke variants of Massachusett, a member of the Algonquian language family, the biggest in eastern North America at the time. Massachusett was the name both of a language and of one of the groups that spoke it. In Massachusett, the name for the New England shore was the Dawn Land, the place where the sun rose. The inhabitants of the Dawn Land were the people of the first light. Because rising sea levels continually flooded the shore, marshy Cape Cod did not fully lock into its contemporary configuration until about 1000 BC. By that time, the Dawn Land had evolved into an ecological crazy quilt of wet maple forests, shellfish-studded tidal estuaries, thick highland woods, mossy bogs full of cranberries and orchids, fractally complex snarls of sandbars and beachfront, and fire-swept stands of pitch pine, tremendous variety even within the compass of a few miles, as the ecological historian William Cronin put it,